Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
In pursuing the statement in Romans 16:25 that Paul's gospel is the gospel which establishes believers, I'm trying to show you how that works. And I've given you a number of examples over the last several broadcasts, and now we are concentrating upon one particular aspect of the gospel, namely the doctrine of justification. A doctrine which is at the heart of the gospel, a doctrine which needs to be understood very thoroughly, a doctrine which is very much under attack in our day, and one that actually was at the heart of the Protestant Reformation back in the 1500s, when many people began to break away from Roman Catholicism, primarily because of a completely different understanding of the gospel, how people are saved. Justification is at the very heart of that. If you do not understand justification, you will not be very well established in the Christian faith. If you do understand it thoroughly, then you will be far more firmly established than you were before and than many other Christians are. And we're not going to go on to many others, but I could suggest that if you'll look at Paul's gospel in Romans chapters 1 through 11 and look particularly for theological terms like justification, propitiation, redemption, reconciliation, some of these terms, and endeavor to come to a good, solid understanding of what each of these concepts mean, then you will understand what he's saying when he says, "It is my gospel which establishes you." These concepts, thoroughly understood, will establish you. And obviously, these concepts are not automatically understood and are not easily understood. And they are not necessary for a person to be saved. That's why we say that the gospel can be understood on different levels. On a simple level, we have the gospel which is able to convert sinners. The 1 Corinthians chapter 15 level of the gospel. But the gospel which will establish Christians has to be a fuller development, a fuller understanding of the gospel, and that's what we are looking at. And the phrase that we are talking about in Romans 15:20 or 16:25 is, "Now to him who is able to establish you according to my gospel." Now back to our examination of the doctrine of justification, which we started, I think, two broadcasts ago. Let me comment briefly upon how this word is used in the Old Testament. The Hebrew word is tzadak, and it has a variety of meanings, frankly. And I'll give you terms for them. Sometimes it has a stative meaning. That means it refers to a state of being righteous. Sometimes it has a demonstrative meaning, such as shown to be righteous. By the way, that's the way that James uses it in his epistle when he talks about, "Was not Abraham our father justified when he offered Isaac upon the altar?" He was shown to be righteous. It had a demonstrative idea. James and Paul are not at odds with one another at all. If you study Paul's writings and study the epistle to James carefully, you will realize that they are perfectly in sync in their understanding of the gospel. However, they do use the word justify in slightly different ways. And James was a Jew steeped in the Hebrew Scriptures, as was Paul. And James applies this demonstrative idea to justification. Abraham was demonstrated to be righteous, whereas Paul generally uses it as a declarative idea. And we'll get to that in a moment. There's a third way that it's used in the Old Testament. That is causative. It's very rare, I'm told, very rare. But that has the idea of caused to be righteous. And then number four, there's the declarative use of the word justification, which is the most frequent by far. It has the idea of being declared to be righteous. In other words, a judicial declaration. That's the way Paul uses it in the New Testament. That's the way that New Testament, that's the way that biblical theology and systematic theology, at least in the Protestant realm, understand that term justification. It is a judicial declaration. God declares the sinner to be just. Now, Rome denies the declarative meaning of justification and instead champions the causative meaning. To justify means to cause to become righteous. Now you see where the heart of the difference lies. Protestants say that to be justified, as it is used, that term is used in the New Testament, particularly as it's used by the Apostle Paul in explaining the gospel, to be justified is a declarative matter. It is God the judge declaring the sinner righteous for the sake of Jesus Christ. Christ's righteousness being imputed to the sinner. That is, his righteousness is transferred to the sinner's account. And on that basis, the sinner is declared legally righteous. Like a man can be declared not guilty in our courts of law. Now, when a man is declared to be not guilty, several things are possible and in some cases are obviously true. The first thing that's true is that that does not declare him to be sinless in every area of his life. He's declared to be not guilty of a particular crime, but that is not speaking about his whole life. Nobody thinks it is. It's not even an issue because we all recognize that everybody has done wrong. We do have this understanding that all have sinned, even if we don't understand it fully in the biblical sense and the implications of it. Nevertheless, we have that idea. Nobody's perfect. And so when a judge declares an accused man, accused criminal, but he's not a criminal until he's declared guilty. When a judge declares an accused person to be not guilty, then as far as the law is concerned, he's not guilty. And he cannot be tried for that crime again if the court has found him not guilty. He can't be brought before that court and declared guilty later. If a full trial has been held, the evidence that was available has been examined, the verdict is not guilty, then legally he's not guilty. You say, well, what happens if some other evidence turns up later that demonstrates that he was guilty? Sorry, he's been declared not guilty. That's the way it works. Now, the other way around, if a man is declared guilty and then some evidence comes along later that would exonerate him and would prove that he is not guilty, then another trial can be ordered. And if in that trial, with the new evidence, a different verdict is reached, then he can be declared not guilty, he who was declared guilty. But it doesn't work the other way around. Once the law has declared a person to be not guilty, he's not guilty in the eyes of the law, even if he did it. What I'm trying to show you is that even in American jurisprudence, it's possible for a person to be actually guilty, but in the eyes of the law, he's treated as if he was not guilty because the law declared him not guilty. And so even if everybody knows he's guilty, can you think of any recent examples of that in American history where nearly everybody knows or at least strongly believes that somebody is guilty, but the law has declared them not guilty, so the law now must treat them according to the official verdict. They cannot be put into jail. They cannot be fined. They cannot be punished. They've been declared not guilty. Now, of course, it's never as simple as it seems. In American justice, there are different courts of law, and maybe someone can come along in a civil court and sue that person for damages, even if they've been declared not guilty in a criminal court. It's quite amazing that those things are possible. American jurisprudence has become so complicated that it really has become, It's become difficult to understand. And I'll stop at that. But my point is that the idea of not guilty, the declaration of not guilty, makes a person's standing before the law righteous. Not guilty as far as that crime is concerned. That's the idea of justification as it is used in the Bible. It's not that the person is declared to be sinless. He's not. Only Christ is sinless. But on the basis of the transaction that takes place between Christ and the sinner, and what God does in imputing the righteousness of Christ to the sinner is legally declared to be just, justified, not guilty, innocent, righteous, sinless, even though he is still a sinner. That's what's difficult for many people to comprehend, but that's what the Bible teaches. Therefore, a justified believer is both saint and sinner at the same time. He's a saint officially, legally, before the judgment bar of God. He's a sinless one. He's a holy one. He's a perfect one. He is a saint in the ultimate sense of that term. Though in his own life and in his own heart, he is still a sinner. He's sinner and saint. But legally, before the judgment bar of God, he is justified. The children's definition of that term, just as if I'd never sinned. That's the way he is in his legal standing before God, not in his actual performance upon earth. And the Bible emphasizes this declarative aspect of justification. It is judicial, or to use another term, it is forensic. In other words, this kind of justification is the opposite of condemnation. Let's take one example of that, as I'm looking for it now in Proverbs chapter 17. And here's what we read in Proverbs 17:15. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the just, both of them are an abomination to the Lord. He who justifies the wicked, that is, he's talking here about the corruption of justice in human courts, judges taking bribes, judges being influenced. So somebody who knows the person is guilty, but is, for whatever reason, persuaded to declare him just, the opposite of what he really is before the law, is an abomination to the Lord. And likewise, anyone who, for whatever reason, condemns the just, a person they know to be guiltless, but they go ahead and pronounce them guilty, like Pilate did for Christ, he is an abomination to the Lord, because guilty people are to be declared guilty and innocent people are to be declared just or justified. Well, we'll take it up again, Lord willing, tomorrow. Until then, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.